some thinning. Noto. We're an army, not a creche. That's all I'm saying. An army under siege. Outnumbered, overcrowded, confused, bored. Except when we're terrified.
He plucked out his fish spine again, whistled in a breath between his teeth.
Caves filled with children. What were they doing with them all? Where are their parents?
Noto.
We should just hand them back, that's all I'm saying, sir.
Haven't you noticed today's the first day they're finally behaving like normal children? What does that tell you?
Doesn't tell me nothing, sir.
Fist writhe bued, now.
Aye, sir, on my way.
Ganos Paran settled his attention on the besieging army, a precise rows of tents like bone tesserae on a buckled floor, the figures scrambling tiny as fleas over the trebuchets and great wagons. The foul air of battle never seemed to leave this valley.
They look ready to try us again. Worth another sortie? Mathok keeps skewering me with that hungry look. He wants at them.
He rubbed at his face. The shock of feeling his beard caught him yet again, and he grimaced.
No one likes change much, do they? But that's precisely my point.
The silk dragon cut across his vision, diving down out of the reams of smoke. He glanced over to the boy on the tower, saw him struggling to keep his footing. A scrawny thing, one of the ones from up south. A shriven.
When it gets too much, lad, he's sure to let go.
Seething motion now in the distant camp. The glint of pikes, the chained slaves marching out to the yokes of the great wagons, high-watered emerging surrounded by runners. Dust slowly lifting in the sky above the trebuchets as they were wheeled forward.
Aye, they're still upset all right. I knew a warrior once, awakening from a wound to the head, believing he was a dog. And what are dogs, if not loyalty, lacking wits? So here I stand, woman, and my eyes are filled with tears. For that warrior who was my friend, who died thinking he was a dog. Too loyal to be sent home, too filled with faith to leave. These are the world's fallen. When I dream, I see them in their thousands, chewing at their own wounds. So do not speak to me of freedom. He was right all along. We live in chains. Beliefs to shackle, vows to choke our throats, the cage of a mortal life. This is our fate. Who do I blame? I blame the gods, and curse them with fire in my heart. When she comes to me, when she says that it's time, I shall take my sword in hand. You say that I am a man of too few words, but against the sea of needs, words are weak as sand. Now, woman, tell me again of your boredom, this stretch of days and nights outside a city obsessed with mourning. I stand before you, eyes leaking with the grief of a dead friend, and all I get from you is a siege of silence. She said,
You have a damned miserable way of talking your way into my bed, Carso Orlong. Fine then, get in. Just don't break me.
I only break what I do not want.
And if the days of this relationship are numbered?
They are, he replied, and then he grinned. But not the nights.
Faintly, the distant city's bells tolled their grief at the fall of darkness. And in the blue-lit streets and alleys, dogs howled. In the innermost chamber of the palace of the city's lord, she stood in shadows, watching as he moved away from the hearth, brushing charcoal from his hands. There was no mistaking his legacy of blood, and it seemed the weight his father had borne was settling like an old cloak on his son's surprisingly broad shoulders. She could never understand such creatures, their willingness to martyrdom, the burdens by which they measured self-worth, this embrace of duty. He settled into the high-backed chair, stretched out his legs, the awakening fire's flickering light licking the studs, wringing his knee-high leather boots. Resting his head back, eyes closed, he spoke.
Hood knows how you managed to get in here, and I imagine Silana's hackles are lifting at this very moment. But if you are not here to kill me, there is wine on the table to your left. Help yourself.
Scowling, she edged out from the shadows. All at once, the chamber seemed too small, its walls threatening to snap tight around her. To so willingly abandon the sky in favor of heavy stone and blackened timbers, no, she did not understand this at all.
Nothing but wine?
Her voice cracked slightly, reminding her that it had been some time since she'd last used it. His elongated eyes opened, and he observed her with unfeigned curiosity.
You prefer ale?
Sorry, you will need to go to the kitchens below for that.
Mare's milk, then.
His brows lifted.
Down to the palace gate, turn left, walk 500 leagues. And that is just a guess, mind you.
Shrugging, she edged closer to the hearth.
The gift struggles.
Gift? I do not understand. She gestured at the flames.
Ah, he said, nodding. Well, you stand in the breath of Mother Dark.
And then he started.
Does she know you're here?
But then, he settled back again, how could she not?
Do you know who I am?
She asked.
Animas. I am Apsalara. His knight within the sword, his one knight, he freed me. He had the time for that, for me.
She found she was trembling. He was still studying her.
And so you have come here?
She nodded.
You didn't expect that from him, did you?
No. Your father, he had no reason for regret. He rose then, walked over to the table and poured himself a goblet of wine. He stood with the cup in hand, staring down at it.
You know, he muttered, I don't even want this. The need to do something.
He snorted.
No reason for regret. Well, they look for him in you, don't they?
He grunted.
Even in my name you will find him, Nemanda. No, I'm not his only son, not even his favored one. I don't think he had any of those, come to think of it. Yet,
and he gestured with the goblet,
there I sit in his chair before his fire. This palace feels like... His bones?
Nemanda flinched, looked away.
Too many empty rooms, that's all. I need some clothes, she said.
He nodded distractedly.
I noticed. Furs, skins. You intend to stay, Apsalara? At your side, yes.
He turned at that, eyes searching her face.
But, she added, I will not be his burden.
A wry smile.
Mine, then? Name your closest advisers, Lord.
He swallowed half the wine and then set the goblet down on the table.
The High Priestess, chaste now, and I fear that does not serve her well. Skintik, a brother, Desra, a sister, Korlat, Spinok, my father's most trusted servants. Tist Andi,
of course.
And the one below?
The one?
Did he once advise you, Lord? Do you stand at the bars in the door's window to watch him mutter and pace? Do you torment him? I wish to know the man I will serve.
She saw clear anger in his face.
Are you to be my jester now? I have heard of such roles in human courts. Will you cut the sinews of my legs and laugh as I stumble and fall?
He bared his teeth.
If yours is to be my face of conscience, Apsalara, should you not be prettier?
She cocked her head, made no reply. Abruptly his fury collapsed, and his eyes fell away.
It is the exile he has chosen. Did you test the lock on that door? It is barred from within. But then we have no problem forgiving him. Advise me, then. I am a lord, and it is in my power to do such things. To pardon the condemned,
Yet you have seen the crypts below us. How many prisoners cringe beneath my iron hand?
One.
And I cannot free him. Surely that is worth a joke or two.
Is he mad?
Clip? Possibly.
Then no, not even you can free him. Your father took scores for the chains of Dragnipur, scores just like this clip.
I dare say he did not call it freedom.
Nor mercy, she replied. They are beyond a lord's reach, even that of a god.
Then we fail them all, both lords and gods. We fail them, our broken children.
This, she realized, would not be an easy man to serve. He drew others to him, your father, others who were not Tistandi. I remember in his court, in Moon's Spawn.
Nemanda's eyes narrowed. She hesitated, unsure, and then resumed.
Your kind are blind to many things. You need others close to you, Lord, servants who are not Tistandi. I am not one of these jesters you speak of. Nor, it seems, can I be your conscience, ugly as I am to your eyes.
He held up a hand. Forgive me for that, I beg you. I sought to wound and so spoke an untruth, just to see it sting.
I believe I stung you first, my lord.
He reached again for the wine and then stood looking into the hearth's flames. Apsalara, mistress of thieves. Will you now abandon that life to become an advisor to a Tistandi lord? All because my father, at the very end, showed you mercy?
I never blamed him for what he did. I gave him no choice. He did not free me out of mercy, Nemanda.
Then why? She shook her head.
I don't know, but I mean to find out.
And this pursuit for an answer has brought you here, to Black Coral. To me?
Yes.
And how long will you stand at my side, Apsalara, whilst I govern a city, sign writs, debate policies, whilst I slowly rot in the shadow of a father I barely knew and a legacy I cannot hope to fill? Her eyes widened.
Lord, that is not your fate.
He wheeled to her. Really? Why not? Please advise me. She cocked her head a second time, studied the tall warrior with the bitter, helpless eyes.
For so long you, Tistandi, prayed for Mother Dark's loving regard. For so long you yearned to be reborn to purpose, to life itself. He gave it all back to you, all of it. He did what he knew had to be done for your sake. You, Nemanda, and all the rest. And now you sit here, in his chair, in his city, among his children, and her holy breath, it embraces you all. Shall I give you what I possess of wisdom? Very well. Lord, even Mother Dark cannot hold her breath forever.
She does not.
When a child is born, it must cry.
You.
With its voice, it enters the world, and it must enter the world. Now,
she crossed her arms,
will you continue hiding here in this city? I am the mistress of thieves, Lord. I know every path. I have walked them all, and I have seen what there is to be seen. If you and your people hide here, Lord, you will all die. And so will Mother Dark. Be her breath. Be cast out.
But we are in this world, Apsalara.
One world is not enough.
Then what must we do?
What your father wanted.
And what is that?
She smiled. Shall we find out?
You have some nerve, Dragon Master.
A child shrieked from somewhere down the walkway. Without turning, Ganos Paran sighed and said, You're frightening the young ones again.
Not nearly enough.
The iron-shod heel of a cane cracked hard on the stone.
Isn't that always the way?
I don't think I appreciate the new title you're giving me, Shadow Throne. A vague, dark smear, the god moved up alongside Paran. The cane's gleaming head swung its silver snarl out over the valley.
Master of the Deck of Dragons, too much of a mouthful. It's your abuses. I so dislike unpredictable people.
He giggled again.
People, ascendants, gods, six-skulled dogs, children.
Where is Cotillion, Shadow Throne?
You should be tired of that question by now.
I'm tired of waiting for an answer.
Then stop asking it!
The guard's manic shriek echoed through the fortress, rattled wild along corridors and through hallways before echoing back to where they stood atop the wall. That has certainly caught their attention, Haran observed, nodding to a distant barrow where two tall, almost skeletal figures now stood. Shadow Throne sniffed.
They see nothing,
he hissed a laugh.
Blinded by justice.
Ganos Paran scratched at his beard. What do you want?
Whence comes your faith?
Excuse me? The cane rapped and skittered on the stone.
You sit with the host in Arran, defying every imperial summons, and then you assault the Warrens with this!
He suddenly cackled.
You should have seen the Emperor's face, and the names he calls you. My, even the court scribes cringed.
He paused.
Where was I? Yes, I was berating you, Dragon Master. Are you a genius? I doubt it. Leaving me no choice but to conclude that you're an idiot.
Is that all?
Is she out there?
You don't know?
Do you?
Haran slowly nodded. Now I understand. It's all about faith, a notion unfamiliar to you, I take it.
This siege is meaningless.
Is it? Shadow Throne hissed, one ethereal hand reaching out, as if to claw at Paran's face. Instead, it hovered, twisted, and then shrank into something vaguely fist-shaped.
You don't understand anything.
I understand this, Paran replied. Dragons are creatures of chaos. There can be no dragon master, making the title meaningless.
Exactly.
Shadow Throne reached out to gather up a tangled snarl of spider's web from beneath the wall's casing. He held it up, apparently studying the cocooned remnant of a desiccated insect. Miserable turd. Here is what I know, Shadow Throne. The end begins here. Do you deny it? No, you can't, else you wouldn't be haunting me.
Not even you can breach the power surrounding this keep, the god said.
You have blinded yourself. Open your gate again, Ganos Paran. Find somewhere else to lodge your army. This is pointless.
He flung the web away and gestured with the head of his cane.
You cannot defeat those two. We both know that.
But they don't, do they?
They will test you, sooner or later.
I'm still waiting.
Perhaps even today.
Will you wager on that, Shadow Throne? The god snorted.
You have nothing I want.
Liar.
Then I have nothing you want.
Actually, as it happens...
Do you see me holding a leash? He's not here. He's off doing other things. We're allies, do you understand? An alliance, not a damned marriage.
Paran grinned. Oddly enough, I wasn't even thinking of Cotillion.
A pointless wager in any case. If you lose, you die. Or abandon your army to die, which I can't see you doing. Besides, you're nowhere near as devious as I am. You want this wager? Truly? Even when I lose, I win. Even when I lose, I win.
Paran nodded. And that has ever been your game, Shadow Throne. You see, I know you better than you think. Yes, I would wager with you. They shall not try me this day. We shall repulse their assault again. And more shriven and watered will die.
we shall remain the itch they cannot scratch.
All because you have faith, fool?
Those are the conditions of this wager. Agreed? The god's form seemed to shift about, almost vanishing entirely at one moment before reappearing, and the cane head struck chips from the merlon's worn edge.
Agreed.
If you win and I survive, resumed Paran, you get what you want from me, whatever that is, and assuming it's in my power to grant, if I win, I get what I want from you.
If it's in my power.
It is. Shadow Throne muttered something under his breath and then hissed.
Very well. Tell me what you want.
And so Paran told him. The god cackled.
And you think that's in my power? You think Cotillion has no say in the matter?
If he does, best you go and ask him then. Unless, Paran added, it turns out that, as I suspect, you have no idea where your ally has got to. In which case, Lord of Shadows, you will do as I ask, and answer to him later.
I answer to no one!
Another shriek, the echoes racing. Paran smiled. Why, Shadow Throne, I know precisely how you feel. Now, what is it you seek from me?
I seek the source of your faith.
The cane waggled.
That she's out there. That she seeks what you seek. That upon the plain of blood and chains, you will find her and stand facing her as if you two had planned this all along, when I damned well know you haven't. You don't even like each other.
Shadow Throne, I cannot sell you faith.
So lie, damn you! Just do it convincingly!
He could hear silk wings flapping, the sound a shredding of the wind itself. A boy with a kite, Dragon Master, ruler over all that cannot be ruled. Ride the howling chaos and call it mastery. Who are you fooling? Lad, let go now. It's too much. But he would not. He didn't know how. The man with the graying beard watches and can say nothing. Distress. He glanced to his left, but the shadow was gone. A crash from the courtyard below drew him round. The throne, a mass of flames, had broken through the mound beneath it, and the smoke leapt skyward like a beast unchained. Chapter 2. I look around at the living, still and bound, hands and knees to stone, by what we found. Was a night as wearying as any just past? Was a dawn any crueler to find us this aghast? By your hand you are staying, and this is fair, but your words of blood are too bitter to bear. Song of Sorrows Unwitnessed, Napan Blight. From here onwards, he could not trust the sky. The alternative, he observed as he examined the desiccated, rotted state of his limbs, invited despondency. Tulash Shorn looked round, noting with faint dismay the truncated lines of sight, an affliction cursing all who must walk the land's battered surface. Scars he had looked down upon from a great height only a short time earlier now posed daunting obstacles, a host of furrowed trenches carving deep, jagged gouges across his intended path.
She is wounded, but does not bleed. Not yet, at any rate. No, I see now. This flesh is dead. Yet I am drawn to this place. Why?
He walked, haltingly, up to the edge of the closest crevasse, peered down. Darkness, a breath cool and slightly sour with decay, and something else. Tulash Shorn paused for a moment and then stepped out into space and plunged downward. Threadbare clothing tore loose, whipped wild as his body struck rough walls, skidded and rebounded in a knock of withered limbs, tumbling amidst hissing grit and sand,
the feathery brush and then snag of grass roots, and now stones spilling to follow him down. Bones snapped when he struck the boulder-studded floor of the fissure. More sand poured down on all sides with the sound of serpents. He did not move for a time. The dust, billowing in the gloom, slowly settled. Eventually he sat up. One leg had broken just above the knee. The lower part of the limb remained attached by little more than a few stretches of skin and sinew. He set the brake and waited while the two ragged ends slowly fused. The four ribs that now thrust broken tips out from the right side of his chest were not particularly debilitating, so he left them, conserving his power. A short while later, he managed to stand, his shoulders scraping walls. He could make out the usual assortment of splintered bones littering the uneven floor, but these were only of mild interest, the fragments of bestial souls clinging to them, writhing like ghostly worms, disturbed by the new currents in the air. He began walking, following the odd scent he had detected from above. It was stronger down here, of course, and with each awkward step along the winding channel, there arose within him a certain anticipation, bordering on excitement. Close now. The skull was set on a spear shaft of corroded bronze, rising to chest height and blocking the path. In a heap at the shaft's base was the rest of the skeleton, every bone systematically shattered. Tulash Shorn halted 2 paces from the skull.
Tarthano?
The voice rumbling through his head spoke, however, in the language of the Amas.
Bentracht, Scan all greets you, Revenant.
Your bones are too large for a Tlanimas.
Yes, but no salvation came of that.
Who did this to you, Skarnarl?
Her body lies a few paces behind me, Revenant.
If you so wounded her in your battle that she died, how was it that she could destroy your body with such vigor?
I did not say she was dead.
Tulash Shorn hesitated and then snorted.
No, nothing lives here. Either she is dead or she is gone.
I can hardly argue with you, Revenant. Now then, do this one thing. Look behind you.
Bemused, he did so, sunlight fighting its way down through dust.
I see nothing.
That is your privilege.
I do not understand.
I saw her step past me. I heard her slide to the ground. I heard her cry out in pain and then weep. And when the weeping was done, all that remained was her breathing, until that too slowed. But I can still hear it. The lift and fall of her chest, with each rise of the moon, when its faint light reaches down, how many times? Many. I have lost count. Why does she remain? What does she want? She will not answer. She never answers.
Saying nothing, Tulash Shorn edged past the stake in its dusty skull. 5 strides further on, he halted, stared down.
Does she sleep, Revenant?
Tulas slowly crouched. He reached down and touched the delicate ribcage lying in a shallow depression at his feet. A newborn's fossilized bones, glued to the ground by calcified limestone.
Born to the tide of the moon, were you, little one? Did you draw even a single breath?
I think not.
Tlanimas, was this the end of your chase?
She was formidable.
A jackhut, a woman.
I was the last on her trail. I failed.
And is it that failure that torments you, Skarnarl? Or that she now haunts you here behind you, forever hidden from your sight?
Awaken her! Or better still, slay her, Revenant. Destroy her. For all we know, she is the very last Jaghut. Kill her and the war will be over, and I will know peace.
There is little peace in death, T'lani Mas. Ah, child, the wind at night moans through you, does it? Night's very own breath to haunt him for all eternity.
Revenant, turn my skull. I would see her again.
Tula Shorn straightened. I will not step between you in this war.
But it is a war you can end.
I cannot. Nor, it is clear, can you. Scan all, I must leave you now. He looked down at the tiny bones. Both of you.
Since my failure, Revenant, I have entertained not a single visitor. You are the first to find me. Are you of such cruelty as to condemn me to an eternity in this state? She defeated me. I accept this. But I beg of you, grant me the dignity of facing my slayer.
You pose a dilemma, Tula Shorn said after a moment's consideration. What you imagine to be mercy may not prove any such thing, should I acquiesce. And then there is this. I'm not particularly inclined to mercy, Scan All. Not with respect to you. Do you begin to comprehend my difficulty? I could indeed reach out and swing your skull round, and you may curse me for all time. Or I could elect to do nothing, to leave everything as I have found it, as if I was never here, and so earn your darkest resentment. In either case, you will see me as cruel. Now, this does not offend me overmuch. As I said, I am not stirred to kindness. The matter I face is, how cruel do I wish to be?
Think on that privilege I spoke of earlier, Revenant. Your simple gift of being able to turn yourself round to see what hides behind you. We both understand that what is seen may not be welcome.
Tula Shorn grunted. T'lani Mas, I know all about looking over my shoulder. He walked back to the skull. Shall I be the brush of wind, then? A single turn, a new world to unfold?
Will she awaken?
I think not, he replied, reaching out and settling one withered fingertip against the huge skull. But you can try. A slow increase in pressure, and with a grating squeal, the skull swung round. The T'lani Mas began howling in Tula Shorn's wake as he walked back up the channel. Gifts are never what they seem, and the punishing hand? It too is not what it seems. Yes, these two thoughts are worthy of long echoes stretching into this wretched future. As if anyone will listen. Vengeance, held tight like an iron-shod spear in her hand, and how it burned. Ralata could feel its searing heat, and the pain was now a gift, something she could feed upon, like a hunter crouched over a fresh kill. She'd lost her horse, she'd lost her people. Everything had been taken away from her, everything except this final gift. The broken moon was a blurred smear, almost lost in the green glow of the strangers in the sky. The skin-cut Bargast stood facing east, her back to the smouldering coals from the hearth, and looked out upon a plain that seemed to seethe in the jade and silver light. Behind her, the black-haired warrior named Draconis spoke in low tones with the Teblor giant. They talked often in some foreign tongue, Lethary, she supposed, not that she'd ever cared to learn it. Even the simpler trader's language made her head ache, but on occasion she caught some Lethary word that had made its way into the pigeon cant, so she knew they were speaking of the journey ahead. East. It was, for the moment, convenient for her to travel in their company, despite having to constantly fend off the Teblor's clumsy advances. Draconis was able to find game where none seemed to exist. He could call water up from cracked bedrock. More than just a warrior, a shaman. And in a scabbard of midnight wood strapped to his back, there was a sword of magic. She wanted it. She meant to have it. A weapon suited to the vengeance she desired. With such a sword, she could kill the winged slayer of her sisters. In her mind, she worked through scenarios. A knife across the man's throat when he slept, and then a stab through an eye for the Teblor. Simple, quick, and she would have what she wanted. If not for the emptiness of this land, if not for the thirst and starvation that would follow. No, for the time being, Draconis must live. For Ublala, however, if she could arrange a terrible accident, then she would not have him to worry about on the night she went for the sword. The dilemma of finding for the oath a fatal demise here on this featureless plain still defeated her, but she had time.
"Come back to the fire, beloved," the Teblor called, "and drink some tea. It has real leaves in it and stuff that smells nice."
Relata massaged her temples for a moment and then turned about.
"I am not your beloved. I belong to no one. I never will."
At seeing the half-smile on the face of Draconis as he tossed another dung chip onto the fire, Relata scowled.
"It is rude,"
she pronounced as she walked over, squatted down and took the Kapu Blala proffered,
"to talk in a language I don't understand. You could be plotting my rape and murder for all I know."
The warrior's brows arched.
"Now, why would we want to do that, Bargast? Besides," he added, "Ublala is courting you."
"He might as well give up now. I don't want him."
Draconis shrugged.
"I have explained to him that most of what we call courting boils down to just being there. Every time you turn, you see him until his company feels perfectly natural to you. Courting is the art of growing like mold on the one you want."
He paused, scratched at the stubble on his jaw.
"I can't lay claim to that observation, but I don't recall who said it first."
Relata spat into the fire to announce her disgust.
"We're not all like Hetan, you know. She used to say she gauged the attractiveness of a man by imagining how he looked when she was staring up at his red face and bulging eyes."
She spat again.
"I am a skin cut, a slayer, a collector of scalps. When I look upon a man, I imagine what he'll look like with the skin of his face sliced away."
"She's not very nice, is she?" Ublala asked Draconis.
"Trying hard, you mean?" Draconis replied.
"Makes me want to sex her even more than before. That's how these things work. It's torture. I don't like it. No, I do. No, I don't. I do. Oh, I'm going to polish my hammer."
Relata stared at Ublala as he surged to his feet and thumped off. Low and in the language of the white faces, Draconis murmured,
"He means that literally, by the way."
She shot him a look and snorted.
"I knew that. He has no wits for anything else."
She hesitated and then said,
"His armor looks expensive."
"It cost dearly, aye, Relata. He wears it well, better than one might have hoped."
He nodded, mostly to himself, she suspected, and said,
"He will stand well, I think, when the time comes."
She remembered this warrior killing Sakara the Vile, snapping the old woman's neck. The ease of the gesture, the way he seemed to embrace her to keep her from falling, as if her lifeless body still clung to something like dignity. He was not a man easily understood.
"What are you two seeking? You walk into the east. Why?"
"There are unfortunate things in the world, Relata."
She frowned.
"I don't know what that means."
He sighed, studied the fire.
"Have you ever stepped on something unintentionally? Out through a doorway, a sudden crunching underfoot? What was it, an insect, a snail, a lizard?"
He lifted his head and fixed her with his dark eyes, the embers gleaming in lurid reflection. Not worth a second thought, was it? Such are the vagaries of life. An ant dreaming of war, a wasp devouring a spider, a lizard stalking the wasp. All these dramas and crunch all over with. What to make of it? Nothing, I suppose. If you have a heart, you apportion out some small measure of guilt and remorse, and then continue on your way. She shook her head, baffled.
You stepped on something?
In the manner of speaking. He nudged the embers and watched as sparks spun upward. No matter. A few ants survived. No end to the little bastards, in fact. I could crush 1,000 nests under heel and it did not make a whit of difference. That's the best way of thinking about it, in fact. He met her eyes again. Does that make me cold? What did I leave behind in those chains, I wonder, still shackled there, a host of forlorn virtues? Whatever. I am having odd dreams of late.
I dream only of vengeance.
The more you dream of one particular and pleasing thing, Relata, the quicker it palls. The edges get worn down, the luster fades. To leave such obsessions behind, dream of them often.
You speak like an old man, a Bargast shaman. Riddles and bad advice, Onos Tulan was right to discount them all.
She almost looked to the west, past his shoulder, as if she might find her people and the war leader all marching straight for them. Instead, she finished the last of the tea in her cup.
Onos Tulan, Draconis muttered, a Nimas name. A strange war leader for the Bargast to have. Will you tell me the tale of that, Relata?
She grunted.
I have no skill for tales. Hetan took him for a husband. He was from the gathering when all the Tlanimas answered the summons of Silver Fox. She returned to him his life, ending his immortality, and then Hetan found him. After the end of the Panian War, Hetan's father was Humbral Tar, who had united the White-Face clans, but he drowned during the landing upon the shores of this continent.
A moment, please. Your tribes are not native to this continent?
She shrugged.
The Bargast gods were awakened to some peril. They filled the brains of the shamans with their panic like sour piss. We must return here to our original homeland to face an ancient enemy. So we were told, but not much else. We thought the enemy was the Tist Edur, then the Lethari, and then the Akrenai. But it wasn't any of them, and now we are destroyed. And if Sakara spoke truly, then Onos Tulan is dead, and so is Hetan. They're all dead. I hope the Bargast gods died with them.
Can you tell me more about these Tlanimas?
They knelt before a mortal man. In the midst of battle, they turned their backs on the enemy. I will say no more of them.
Yet you chose to follow Onos Tulan.
He was not among those. He stood alone before Silver Fox, a thing of bones, and demanded—
But Draconis had leaned forward, almost over the fire.
A thing of bones? Tlan? Telan! Abyss below!
He suddenly rose, startling Relata further, and she watched as he paced, and it seemed black ink was bleeding out from the scabbard at his back, a stain that hurt her eyes.
That bitch, he said in a low growl. You selfish, spiteful hag!
Ublala heard the outburst, and he suddenly loomed into the dull glow of the fire, his huge mace leaning over one shoulder.
What did she do, Draconis?
He glared at Relata.
Should I kill her? If she's being spellfish and sightful, what's rape mean, anyway? It's got to do with sex? Can I...
Ublala, Draconis cut in. I was not speaking of Relata. The Teblor looked round.
I don't see no one else, Draconis. She's hiding? Whoever she is, I hate her, unless she's pretty. Is she pretty? Mean is all right if they're pretty.
The warrior was staring at Ublala.
Best climb into your furs, Ublala, and get some sleep. I'll stand first watch.
All right. I wasn't tired anyway.
He swung about and set off for his bedroll.
Be careful with those curses,
Prahlata said in a hiss, rising to her feet.
What if he strikes first and then asks questions?
He glanced across at her.
The Tlani Mas were undead.
She nodded.
She never let them go?
Silver Fox? No.
They asked, I think, but no. He seemed to stagger, and turning away, he slowly sank down onto one knee, facing away from her. The pose was one of dismay or grief, she could not be sure. Confused, Prahlata took a step towards him and then stopped. He was saying something, but in a language she knew not. A phrase over and over again, his voice hoarse, thick.
Draconis?
His shoulders shook, and then she heard the rumble of laughter, a deathly humorless sound.
And I thought my penance was long.
Head still lowered, he said,
This Onos Tulan, is he now truly dead, Prahlata?
So Sakara said.
Then he is at peace, at long last, at peace.
I doubt it, she said.
He twisted round to regard her.
Why do you say that?
They killed his wife. They killed his children. If I was Onos Tulan, even death would not keep me from my revenge.
He drew a sharp breath, and it caught as if on a hook, and once more he turned away. The scabbard dripped blackness as if from an open wound.
Oh, how I want that sword.
Wants and needs could starve and die, no different from love. All the grand gestures of honor and faithful loyalty meant nothing when the only witnesses were grass, wind, and empty sky. It seemed to Mappo that his nobler virtues had withered on the vine, and the garden of his soul, once so verdant, now rattled skeletal branches against stone walls. Where was his promise? What of the vows he had uttered, so sober and grim in youth, so shiny of portent, as befitted the broad-shouldered brave he had once been? Mappo could feel dread inside, hard as a fist-sized tumor in his chest. His ribs ached with the pressure of it, but it was an ache he had lived with for so long now it had become a part of him, a scar far larger than the wound it covered.
And this is how words are made flesh. This is how our very bones become the rack of our own penance, and the muscles twitch in slick skins of sweat, the head hangs loose. I see you, Mappo, so slumped down in pathetic surrender. He was taken from you, like a bauble stolen from your purse. The theft stung, it stings still. You feel outraged, violated. This is pride and indignation, isn't it? These are the sigils on your banner of war, your lust for vengeance. Look upon yourself, Mappo. You mouth the arguments of tyrants now, and all shrink from your path. But I want him back at my side. I swore my life to protecting him, sheltering him. How can that be taken away from me? Can you not hear the empty howl in my heart? This is a pit without light, and upon all the close walls surrounding me I can feel nothing but the gouges my claws have made.
The green sheen upon the broken land was sickly to his eyes, unnatural, an ominous imposition that made the shattering of the moon seem almost incidental.
But worlds heal when we do not.
Mustiness clung to the night air, as of distant corpses left to rot.
There have been so many deaths in this wasteland. I don't understand it. Was this my Ikarium's sword, his rage? I should have felt that, but the very ground barely breathes. Like an old woman in her death cot, she can but tremble to faraway sounds, thunder and a darkness upon the sky.
There is war,
Mappo grunted. They'd been silent for so long he'd almost forgotten Gruntal's presence, standing here at his side.
What do you know of it?
He asked,
pulling his gaze away from the eastern horizon. The barb-tattooed caravan guard shrugged.
What is there to know? Deaths beyond counting, slaughter to make my mouth water, hackles rise. Even in this gloom I can see the dismay in your face, Trell, and I share it. War, it is what it was and always will be. What else is there to say?
You yearn to join the fray?
My dreams tell me different.
Mappo glanced back at the camp. The humped forms of their sleeping companions, the more regular mound of the fresh burial cairn. The desiccated shape of cartographer seated upon the stones, a tattered wolf lying at his feet. Two horses, the scatter of packs and supplies, an air of death and sorrow.
If there is war, he said, facing Gruntle again, who profits?
The man rolled his shoulders, a habit of his, Mappo now knew, as if Trake's mortal sword sought to shift a burden no one else could see.
Ever the question, as if answers meant anything, which they don't. Soldiers are herded into the Iron Maw, and the ground turns to red mud, and someone on a nearby hill raises a fist in triumph, while another flees the field on a white horse.
I warrant Trake takes little pleasure in his chosen warrior's views on the matter.
Warrant more how little I care, Mappo. A soul-taken tiger, but such beasts keep no company. Why should Trake expect anything different? We are solitary hunters. What manner of war can we hope to find? That is the irony in the whole mess. The tiger of summer is doomed to hunt the perfect war, but never find it. See how his tail lashes.
No, I see that. For the true visage of war, best turn to the snarling jaws of wolves.
Setok, he said in a murmur.
She has dreams of her own, I'm sure,
Gruntle said.
Traditional wars, Mappo mused, are fermented in the winter, when the walls close in and there is too much time on one's hands. The barons brood, the kings scheme, raiders plot their passages through borderlands. The wolves howl in winter, but come the season's turn, summer is born to the savagery of blades and spears, the savagery of the tiger.
He shrugged.
I see no conflict there. You and Setok, and the gods bound to you, you all complement one another.
It is more complicated than that, Trell. Cold iron belongs to the wolves. Trake is hot iron, a fatal flaw to my mind. Oh, we do well in the bloody press. But then you must ask, how in Hood's name did we get into such a mess in the first place? Because we don't think.
Gruntle's tone was both amused and bitter.
And so your dreams visit visions upon you, mortal sword? Troubling ones?
No one remembers the nice ones, do they? Yes, troubling. Old friends long dead stalk the jungle. They walk lost, arms groping. Their mouths work, but no sound reaches me. I see a panther, my mistress of the hunt, in these dreams, by the way. She lies gored and bloody, panting fast in shock, dumb misery in her eyes.
Gored?
Boar's tusk.
Fenner?
As the god of war, he was unchallenged, vicious as any tiger, and cunning as any pack of wolves. With Fenner in the ascendant, we knelt with heads bowed.
Your mistress lies dying?
Dying? Maybe. I see her, and rage fills my eyes in a flood of crimson. Gored, raped, and someone will pay for that. Someone will pay.
Mappo was silent.
Raped?
Gruntle then growled as befitted his patron god, and Mappo's nape hairs stiffened at the sound. The Trell said,
I will part this company on the morrow.
You seek the battlefield.
Which none of you need witness, I think.
He was there, you see. I felt him, his power. I will find the trail, I hope. And you, Gruntle, where will you lead this troop?
East, a little south of your path. But I'm not content to walk at the side of the wolves for much longer. Setok speaks of a child in a city of ice.
Crystal. Mappo briefly closed his eyes. A crystal city.
And Precious Thimble believes there is power there. Something she might be able to use to take the shareholders home. They have a destination, but it is not mine.
Do you seek your mistress? There are no jungles east of here unless they exist on the far coast. Gruntle started.
Jungles? No. You think too literally, Mappo. I seek a place at her side to fight a battle. If I am not there, she will indeed die. So my ghosts tell me in their haunting. It is not enough to arrive too late, to see the wound in her eyes, to know that all that you can hope to do is avenge what was done to her. Not enough, Trell. Never enough.
The wound in her eyes. You do this all for love? Mortal sword, do your ribs ache? Does she haunt you, whoever she was? Or is Trake simply feeding you the ripest meat? It is not enough to arrive too late. Oh, I know the truth of that. Violated. Raped. Now comes the dark question. Who profits from this?
Faint huddled under her furs, feeling as if she'd been dragged behind a carriage for a league or two. There was nothing worse than cracked ribs. Well, if she'd sat up only to find her severed head resting on her lap, that would be worse.
But probably painless, all things considered. Not like this. Miserable ache, 1,000 twinges vying for attention, until everything turns white and then red and then purple and finally blissful black. Where's the black? I'm waiting. Been waiting all night.
At dusk, Setok had drawn close to tell her that the Trell would be leaving on the morrow. How she knew was anyone's guess, since Mappo wasn't in any mood to talk, except to Gruntle, who was one of those men it was too easy to talk to, a man who just invited confession, as if giving off a scent or something. Hood knew she wanted to... A spasm. She stifled a gasp, waited out the throbs, and then sought to shift position once more. Not that one was more comfortable than any other. More a matter of duration. 20 breaths lying this way, 15 that way, and flat on her back was impossible. She'd never imagined how the weight of her own tits could crush the breath from her, and the gentle sweep of the furs threatened to close like a vice when she thought of settling her arms. It was all impossible, and come the dawn, she'd be ready to snap off heads.
Then Gruntle will leave us too. Not yet. But he won't stay. He can't.
Setok had a way with words, the heaps of good news she stacked like the coins of a private treasure. Maybe the grasses whispered in her ears as she lay there so gentle and damnably asleep, or the crickets and just listened to them. No, that was her spine crackling away. She fought back a moan. So before long, it would be the shareholders and the barbarian Torrent, along with the three runts and Setok herself. She didn't count Cartographer, the wolf or the horses. Not for any particular reason, even if only the horses were actually alive.
I don't count them, that's all.
So just them, and who among them was tough enough to fight off the next attack from that winged lizard? Torrent? He looked too young, with the eyes of a hunted hare.
And only one bowl left, and that's bad. Poor boy's miserable. Here's the deal. Let's not bury any more friends, shall we?
But Precious Thimble was adamant. Raw power waited in the east. She thought she could do something with it. Open a warren, get the hood out of here.
Can't argue with that. Wouldn't want to. Sure, she's just a cherry of a lass, is our Precious. And if she's now regretting her teas, why,
That will make her more careful from now on, which isn't a bad thing. A roll with Gruntle would be delicious, but it'd kill me. Besides, I'm all scarred up. Lopsided, huh? Who'd want a freak, except out of pity? Be rational and don't shy from its jagged edge. Your days of crooking a finger to get a tumble are done. Find some other hobby, woman. Spinning, maybe. Butter churning. Is that a hobby? Probably not. You can't sleep through this. Face it. It'll be months before a decent night, sleeping or otherwise.
Gruntle thinks he's going someplace to die. He doesn't want us to die with him.
That's nice, Setok. Thanks for that.
In the Crystal City there is a child. Beware the opening of his eyes.
Listen, sweetie. The little one right here needs his butt wiped, and the twins are pretending not to notice, but the smell's getting a tad rank, right? Take this handful of grass.
Life was so much better on the carriage, off delivering whatever. Faint grunted and then flinched at the pain.
Gods, woman, you're completely insane. Let me dream of a tavern. Smoky, crowded, a perfect table. We're all sitting there working out the shakes. Quell duck walks to the loo. The bowls make faces at each other and then laugh. Recanto's broken a thumb and he's putting it back in place. Glano can't see the barman. He can't even see the table in front of him. Sweetest Sufferance is looking like a plump cat with a rat's tail hanging from her mouth. Another pitcher arrives. Recanto looks up. Who's paying for this? He asks.
Faint cautiously lifted one hand, moved it up to brush her cheeks.
Blissful Black, you seem so far away.
In the false dawn, Torrent opened his eyes. Some violence still rocked in his skull, a dream, but already the memory of its details faded. Blinking, he sat up. Chill air stole in beneath his Rodara wool blanket, plucking at the beads of sweat on his chest. He glanced over at the horses, but the beasts stood calm, dozing. In the camp, the shapes of the others were motionless in the grainy half-light. Casting the blanket aside, he rose. The greenish glow was paling to the east. The warrior walked over to his horse, greeted it with a low murmur, and settled a hand upon its warm neck. Tales of cities and empires, of gas that burned with blue flame, of secret ways through the world that his eyes could not see, all left him disturbed, agitated, though he was not sure why. He knew Tok had come from such an empire, far away across the ocean, and his lone eye had looked upon scenes Torrent could not imagine. Yet around the All-Warrior now was a more familiar landscape, rougher than the Aldan. True, but just as open, sweeping, the earth levelled beneath the vast sky. What other sort of place could an honest man desire? The eyes could reach, the mind could stretch. There was space for everything, a tent or yurt for nightly shelter, a ring of stones to embrace the cook fire, the steam rising from the backs of the herds as the dawn gently broke. He longed for such a scene. The morning's greeting, one he had always known. Dogs rising from their beds of grass, the soft cry of a hungry babe from one of the yurts, the smell of smoke as hearths were awakened once more. Sudden emotion gripped him, and he fought back a sob. All gone. Why am I still alive? Why do I cling to this misery, this empty life? When you are the last, there is no reason to keep living. All of your veins are cut, the blood drains and drains, and there's no end to it. Red Mask, you murdered us all. Did his kin await him in the spirit world? He wished he could believe. He wished his faith had never been shattered, crushed under the heel of leathery soldiers. If the All Spirits had been stronger, if they had been all the shamans said they were, we would not have died, not have failed. We would never have fallen. But if they existed at all, they were weak, ignorant, and helpless against change. Balanced on a bowstring, and when that string snapped, their world was done with, forever. He saw Setok awaken, watched her stand up, running